Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. You could listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. A report from the latest trial of Julian Assange in London. A court ruled that he can have another appeal to block his extradition to the U.S. for publishing documents exposing U.S. war crimes and espionage. His wife Stella and the current editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks are interviewed. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is not headed for the United States, at least for now. Today, he won his bid to appeal his extradition to the U.S. on espionage charges. Assange has been fighting extradition from the U.K. for more than a decade after WikiLeaks revealed classified information about the U.S. military back in 2010.
Supporters of Julian Assange celebrate as London's High Court grants the WikiLeaks founder the right to appeal his extradition to the United States.
It's so important that Julian Assange is freed as soon as possible, completely, because he's done so much for humanity and truth. And I'm so grateful to him because he's given us all across the world the chance and the potential to have a better world.
There is no case. Espionage Act, absolute nonsense. It's journalism. He reported crimes, and he's in jail for reporting crimes. What does that tell you?
Assange is wanted in the US on 18 charges, mostly relating to the mass leak in 2010 and 2011 of confidential documents pertaining to the US military. Military activity. Two High Court judges granted Assange his right to appeal his extradition after his lawyers argued that as an Australian citizen, he might not be granted the First Amendment right to freedom of speech if he were forced to stand trial in the US.
Where is justice? There is no justice!
Assange wasn't present in the courtroom due to poor health. His wife says the judge's decision doesn't go far enough.
Obviously, the immediate feeling was of relief. But part of me had hoped that the judges would have reached the same conclusion and also said, you know, we've looked at this, we've heard enough, Julian should just be released. They could have done that, but they didn't.
The next hearing will likely be in a few months' time. It is the next step in Julian Assange's long quest for freedom and justice.
DW correspondent Birgit Maas was at London's High Court. She spoke to WikiLeaks' current editor-in-chief shortly after the verdict.
So, there's a lot of celebration here, but Julian Assange is still in prison.
It's a partial victory, I do admit, but it's a very important one, and it could mark a title turn in the entire case. It could be the beginning of the end of this case for against Julian Assange. The simple fact that the court here did not take and believe these assurances of the U.S. government, they acknowledged that he will be discriminated against, he will not have First Amendment protection, that is important. That sends a signal over the ocean that the case should be basically dropped. It is viewed here as being unacceptable, and in essence, if you play this forward, the courts are basically saying even the appeal can only have one rational solution. If the assurances that he's not discriminated against are insufficient, what else are they going to say in a proceedings? So that should be a mere formality and stopping the extradition. And of course, in that scenario, the Americans should accept the fact that they've lost. They've lost this battle. They've lost the battle morally, long time ago. And now legally even, which we've been waiting for and fighting for a very long time.
But do you believe in a political solution?
A political solution? Of course I believe in a political solution, because this is a political case. It's always been a political case. And you cannot end a political fiasco like the persecution of Julian Assange except with a political intervention. So I see the onus now on the Biden administration, who, according to the president's word a few weeks ago, is considering the request by the Australian government to end this. The message here to Joe Biden is, well, work harder on considering it, and the conclusion should only be one.
So how do you see his road to freedom?
By the case being dropped.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. First, a review of the international press on the death of Iranian President Raisi, a controversial hardliner. Press reviews on the International Criminal Court's recommending arrest warrants for Netanyahu, Gallant, and three Hamas officials. Norway, Ireland, and Spain recognized a Palestinian state. An interview with the Palestinian ambassador to France, Hala Abu Hassira. She talks about state recognition and that the only possible solution is political, not military. While the US and UK condemn the ICC warrants, France and most other EU countries did not. France 24.
You're bringing us the latest reaction to the death of Raisi today, both in Iran and further afield.
Yeah, and I'll start with Iran. This is the Tehran Times, which is the country's biggest English language newspaper. They have the headline, Martyrdom in the Line of Duty. This was updated just a few minutes after Raisi was confirmed to have died, of course, anticipated for a long time before being officially confirmed. This is the country's biggest paper, Donya Ektesad. They have this on the paper, quite a simple headline, a tragedy for the president. I just want to show you a shot from National State TV. This is just before the death was announced, but you can see a very somber tone. Both the anchors wearing black shirts with an image of the president behind. The opposition website Iran International is not in the mood for mourning his death. They call Raisi poorly educated, a man who blundered his way into the presidency. They say his weak speeches cast a shadow over his aspirations for succession. They also report on jubilation of many Iranians who they say have set off fireworks all over the country and expressed satisfaction on social media. I'll finish by showing you this piece in the Tehran Times. They discuss the other man who died in this crash, well, one of a few who died in the crash, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian. He, of course, died in that crash as well. They call him a career diplomat. He was described as many by a hardliner close to the country's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard. He confronted the West while also overseeing indirect talks with the US over the country's nuclear program. Abdollahian represented the hardline shift in Iran after the collapse of Tehran's nuclear deal with world powers.
And Leo, you've also been monitoring some of the international reaction to Raisi's death.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, this news is making headlines all over the world. I'll start with the Frankfurter in Germany. They present him, Raisi, as the main architect of repression of women in Iran, repressing the protests triggered by the death of Mahsa Amini back in 2022. They say that will be a big part of his legacy. I'll bring you a couple of pieces looking at the future of the country without Raisi at the helm. The Economist say that his death will spark a high-stakes power struggle, forcing the regime to find a new president in a quick amount of time. In fact, only 50 days, a new election must be held within 50 days. They note that the economy is sinking and it could be hit by further tightening American sanctions. This article says that not many of the older generation will mourn their death. There's a lot of animosity towards Raisi. He's remembered by many as the man playing a leading role in the mass execution of political prisoners back in 1988. They go on to say that Mr. Raisi's death would throw Iran's looming power struggle into chaos by removing one of the two leading candidates for Ali Khamenei as supreme leader. The Guardian have more on that possible succession. They say that Khamenei's son is now the obvious candidate to replace him, but many oppose a hereditary succession. They add that Raisi's death will really add to the sense of a country already in political transition. A new hardline parliament was only elected in March, in which turnout for some of the elections fell below 10%, and overall turnout was 41%. So it really paints a picture of a country in turmoil at the moment.
And Dipti, papers today are very much divided over the International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor recommending or asking for arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, also Israel's defence minister, and also, it has to be said, three Hamas officials today.
That's right, five individuals in total. The Jerusalem Post here, the right-wing Israeli paper, calls it an historic arrest, but not in a good sense. You see here on its page, it also talks about Israel being blindsided, a dark day for Israel. How did it come to this? The paper wonders, citing the prime minister, who says that the ICC, the International Criminal Court, is pouring oil on the fires of anti-Semitism. Further to the right, Israel Hayom calls it laughable, the arguments made by the ICC to justify these arrest warrants that have been issued for Netanyahu and his defense minister, as you mentioned. The Wall Street Journal also similarly quite critical, saying that the ICC has disgraced itself over Israel. The editorial board today saying that the ICC is also making the error of lumping together, according to them, Israel's democratic leaders who are just protecting themselves, and Hamas's mass murderers and rapists.
But of course, Dipti, a lot of papers seeing that recommendation by the ICC chief prosecutor as a very much a justified move.
Yeah, that's right. Let's show you Haaretz. This is a centre-left Israeli daily. Really puts the blame squarely on Benjamin Netanyahu himself, predicting that the prime minister will present himself as Israel's martyr in the wake of these arrest warrants. But his poor management of the war and the government's, I quote, cowardly stupidity has made Israel an international pariah on the world stage and has put them on the same level as Hamas. That's according to Haaretz. Meanwhile, the New York Times has an interesting article here, a guest writer hailing this decision by the ICC as giving the world a promise of accountability. The prosecutor's request for arrest warrants for both Netanyahu, his defense minister, and Hamas officials helps cut through polarizing language and promotes the idea that the basic rules of international humanitarian law should apply to everyone. And the writer says that anyone who is welcoming an end to this conflict in Gaza should also welcome this decision taken by the ICC's chief prosecutor.
Norway, Ireland and Spain together recognizing a Palestinian state. It's a largely symbolic move, but it further deepens Israel's isolation. Well, joining us now, Palestinian Ambassador Hala Abu Hassira, head of the Palestinian mission to France. Thank you for being with us here.
Thank you for the invitation.
On France 24. This had been in the works for a while, comes the same week as the arrest warrant requests by the ICC's chief prosecutor. Your reaction?
Very positively, we highly welcome the recognition by Ireland, Norway and Spain today of the Palestinian state. A recognition that comes in coherence with the engagement of these states and with the international community towards the recognition of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination and to preserve the two-state solution, a solution that has been advocated for so long, advocated by the whole of the international community. It's about time. Today was the moment that collectively these countries recognize the state of Palestine, of the Palestinian people's right to exist, of his national identity, and to say it's the moment to make peace. It's the moment to stop the aggression, and that there is no solution, military solution, to the Palestinian question. The only solution would be political, and should be political.
Now, what we're seeing is, and we heard analysts on this very set 24 hours ago, warning that this increased pressure on Israel may lead to the opposite effect, the government of Benjamin Netanyahu doubling down. And we saw it today with his far-right security minister going to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, with Mr. Smotrich freezing tax revenues for the West Bank. Is this going to make things worse before they make it better?
Israel has been doing this for 76 years already, since it's begun at the Palestinian Nakba, and it began its ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. The colonization has been expanding at an unprecedented level even before October. The violation of the rights of the Palestinian people, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and now the crime of genocide are happening in spite of the international will, in spite of international law, in spite of the provisional measures ordered by the ICJ, and in spite of the recent decision by the ICC. Israel is, I would say, violating every single article of international law. Of course, it will collectively punish the Palestinian people, as it has always been doing. But today we say it's not up to Israel. Israel has never been as isolated on the international scene. Israel has never been as isolated as it is today in the United Nations. And Israel has to choose today. This is the moment of choice, whether they want really what kind of future they want for their people, for the Palestinian people, for the peoples of the region as well. This is the moment of choice for Israel to stop its aggression, its crimes, and to abide by international law.
So some Hamas officials taking credit for the fact that the likes of Spain, Ireland, and Norway are recognizing a Palestinian state, saying if we hadn't picked up our weapons and had armed struggle, this wouldn't have happened. What's your reaction?
The state of Palestine has been engaged in a legal battle, I would say, on the international arena for the recognition of the state of Palestine since decades today. And today's recognition comes as a fruit of the combat, really the struggle of the Palestinian people for the past 76 years. Today, this is the victory of the Palestinian people. This is the recognition of his existence, an existence that is denied by the State of Israel and its ministers. This is a recognition for equality.
Is Hamas right, though, to take credit?
The whole of Palestinian people should take credit for this. And President Abbas, who was engaged for decades in the peaceful way to find a peaceful solution with Israel. The question today is, what does Israel want? Does it want to go in the path of negotiations, in the path and the way of peace that preserves the equality, rights, equal rights for everyone in the region? This is the question today.
Ambassador Asira, France recognizing the independence of the ICC earlier this week, distancing itself from the positions of the UK and the United States. But at the same time, it's not recognizing a Palestinian state at this time. What's your reaction to that? Is France right?
I invite France to immediately recognize the state of Palestine in coherence with
its... Do you understand the French position?
With its, I really hope that France seizes this moment, this very brilliant moment today, a victory for international law, for the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. And this recognition by France would be in coherence with its different votings in the Security Council, in the General Assembly, in the annual voting that France votes for the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. This is the right moment, and I hope France joins these countries who are sending a clear message that double standard is no longer acceptable, that Israel does not have a veto on any peaceful move the international community is taking.
How do you explain France's position?
As I said, it's double standards. We have to be clear today. This is a moment of truth. We have to be coherent with declarations. France has to be coherent with its declarations towards preserving the two-state solution. To preserve this solution, France has to recognize the state of Palestine that is not yet done by France.
Ambassador Hasira, many thanks for being with us here on France 24.
Thank you.
That interview and reports were from France 24. France 24 is easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this listener-funded program, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. My online support information is available at outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who has ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please keep it up. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The World Health Organization's Director General deplored the appalling conditions in the Gaza Strip caused by the intentional seizing and closing of border crossings for aid trucks. In Britain, anti-war activists have been demonstrating outside weapons factories. Protesters in the U.S. have been interrupting speeches by Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The government of Bolivia has contributed 70 tons of humanitarian aid to Brazil to help with those affected by the tragic floods. Radio Havana, Cuba.
World Health Organization, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus has deplored the appalling conditions in the Gaza Strip, stating that supplies of essential medicines and fuel in the territory are very low since the Israeli army has seized and closed the Rafah border crossing. Quote, entry of emergency medical teams and medical supplies through the Rafah border crossing into Gaza has been blocked since May the 6th. Inside the strip, supplies of essential medicines and fuel are very low, and the movement is limited due to security constraints, Ghebreyesus wrote in a post published on the social platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Quote, evacuation orders, intensified bombardment, and no passage for aid across Gaza continue and put civilian lives and health at grave risk. The WHO chief further noted that reports of intense hostilities in the vicinity of Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza and an increased influx of injured patients to the medical facility are deeply worrisome given the hospital's limited capacity to provide care. Quote, we have lost the words to describe the situation in Gaza. It is high time for a ceasefire and peace for the civilians there, he added. Meanwhile, Salma Maarouf, Gaza's government media office spokesman, told reporters that Israeli forces are, quote, purposefully worsening the humanitarian situation by halting the entry of aid supplies from Rafah and Karim Abu Salim border crossings and by targeting hospitals and schools in eastern Rafah. Anti-war activists in Britain have demonstrated outside weapons factories against arms shipments to Israel. In Glasgow, a group of protesters blocked the entrance in the Thales plant. In Shenstone, members of the Palestine Action Group blocked entrances to the UAV Engines Limited. Police arrested six protesters at that scene. In recent weeks, hundreds of thousands of protesters have marched through London demanding Israeli regime stop the genocidal war in the besieged strip. London is under domestic pressure since an Israeli attack in April on a World Central Kitchen convoy in Gaza killed three British nationals. Foreign Secretary David Cameron recently said Britain will not halt arms sale to Israel, even if the regime stages a large-scale invasion of the southern city of Rafah. Critics say that Britain's weapon industry has been cashing in on the genocide in Gaza, with a pivotal role being played by the BAE Systems in supplying the Zionist killing machine. The British arms giant BAE reported the highest ever profits in 2023, partly due to the war in Ukraine, but also thanks to Israel's brutal campaign in Gaza. British companies provide virtually 15% of the components of the F-35 stealth combat aircraft to Israel, and they use it to bomb Gaza. Meanwhile, activists in different parts of the world are marking the 76th anniversary of Nakba, or catastrophe, where tens of thousands of Palestinians were expelled from their homes and lands in 1948 to make way for the creation of Israel. The testimony of the head of the U.S. diplomacy, Antony Blinken, was interrupted this Tuesday in a Senate hearing by a protest against the Biden administration's support for Israel in its war on Gaza. At least two people were removed from the room when Blinken spoke. One of them was wearing a T-shirt with the inscription "Invest in Life" and a sign that said "War Criminal" in reference to the Secretary of State, according to images released by local media. Protesters have become increasingly common at hearings involving Blinken, who seems at the face of the Biden administration's support for the genocidal action in Gaza. A growing number of Democrats have criticized Biden for his unwavering support for Israel, despite massive civilian casualties and the humanitarian crisis in the coastal enclave. The protests raise concern about Biden's campaign and fears that younger and progressive voters are unhappy with the president's policies. While some applauded the order of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to arrest Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the United States reacted against it. Blinken said at the time hearing he wanted to work with Republican Senator James Risch, ranking members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, on anti-ICC legislation. Quote, "Given yesterday's events, I believe we have to consider appropriate measures once again to address what is a profoundly wrong decision," he stressed. For Risch, the ICC goals would be poking, quote, "its nose into the affairs of countries that have a legitimate and democratic independent judicial system," unquote. The government of Bolivia has delivered 70 tons of humanitarian aid to Brazil to help famines affected by the floods. The Minister of Defense, Edmundo Novillo, expressed at the Viru airport, quote, "Brazil had to regret the loss of human lives, loss of materials, productive areas, generating an emergency situation, and a very difficult situation for the people of the southern part of Brazil. We have understood the mandate of our President Luis Arce and commitment between people. We are a small country, but we have a heart of solidarity," he said. Novillo stressed, quote, "After learning about the situation that brother people of Brazil were going through, our president has communicated with the president of Brazil, Brother Lula da Silva, to let him know of his feelings of solidarity and support. For this reason, the cabinet has decided to be able to send our support as the Bolivian people." The aid delivered to the Brazilian consul in Bolivia, Arta Saravia, thanked the Bolivians for the gesture, consisting of non-perishable foods such as rice, sugar, powdered milk, oil, water, beans, as well as canvas tents, blankets, country store, diapers, mattresses, amongst others. Saravia stressed the floods in southern Brazil are of a biblical proportion and affirmed that they had not yet ended.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. We have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.